Love a rugby league same game multi? Then you've got to check out Picklebet same game multi. Watch your odds and payouts skyrocket when you combine your favorite team's markets, like head-to-head, first try scorer, and winning margin. Picklebet, the next-gen betting app and official sponsor of the NRL All-Stars podcast.
What are you really gambling with?
For free and confidential support, call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au.
You'll never know if you don't go. You'll never shine if you don't glow. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid.
Welcome to another episode of the NRL All-Stars podcast. Barnsley here for the weekly talk and footy episode. And like always, there is a lot of talk and footy to be had. This week, we've got Marty Jones on board as our guest. Marty is a resident Dragons fan, has his ear to the ground a lot for the Dragons. So we got him on the Dragons Supercoach preview podcast in the preseason, which was great. A lot of great info and opinions from Marty. But he's jumped on board to talk some footy this week. So Marty, welcome back to the podcast, mate.
Yeah, nice to be here. Bit of a miserable day at Yamba at the moment. So I had a good surf this morning. The big southerly whipped up the swell. But other than that, it's kind of a good day to be inside, to be honest. So timing of the podcast is exceptional.
It is absolutely beautiful at my neck of the woods in Sydney. So blue skies, sunny. It is perfect day to be outside. But that's all right. I love talking footy anyway. And talking footy, there is heaps on. So for those that are listening maybe for the first time, we've got the weekly Supercoach episode that hits every Wednesday, and this is a weekly Talk and Footy episode where we don't talk Supercoach, we just talk everything in rugby league, past and present. So before we talk about the round that was and go into a little bit of our strategy chat for this week, everyone would have heard the Picklebet ad at the start of the podcast. Picklebet are our official betting partner of the NRL All-Stars podcast, and I love working with them. They've got some great offers. This is 3 weeks in a row now where they've kept the offer up for you to get up to $50 back on an NRL same game multi if one leg fails. So throw it in there. If a leg fails, you get up to $50 back in bonus bets. Their same game multis are awesome. They've got so many markets in there now. I've got a same game multi that I'm going to throw on, and it is a lower odds one. If you like to throw one in that you think's a high chance of coming in and putting a $50 on it, $2.50 you'll get for it, only three legs. So, you know, it's pretty easy to get through, but if one fails, you get up to 50 back. William Warbrick to score a try anytime for the Storm. The Storm to win by 12 plus points and the total match points to be over 34.5. Pretty confident on that one. If you don't like your rugby league betting and you like some other stuff, they've got a great basketball one too, and I'm heavily into the basketball. At the moment, they've got a really cool promo that I haven't seen on any other bookies where it's called the 3-2 win promo. And basically, you get $4 odds in the basketball if two or more three-pointers are scored in the first 2 minutes of the game. Max bet $50, but geez, the way the NBA teams throw up three-pointers, especially at this point of the season where it's the last games before the playoffs, they don't care as much. They're just throwing up prayers, throwing up a million three-pointers. At the start of a game for two to go in the first 2 minutes, it's pretty regular. So I reckon $4 odds for that is great. If you're going to have a bet, have a look at Picklebet, create an account today, and also make sure that you put in the affiliate code or promo code as All-Stars, all one word. That way they'll know you've come from the podcast and they'll take great care of you. But they've got great odds, great service. Jump on them today and have a look. Always remember, though, is this a bet that you really want to place? For free and confidential support, you can call 1-800-858-858 or visit gamblinghelponline.org.au. Now, last round, it was a very interesting round, as every round has been, I think, so far this season, with a lot happening. When we're doing the grounds review on round five, it started off with the Melbourne Storm 34-32 over the Brisbane Broncos. Quite an arm wrestle. There was a lot going on in this game. And it was, I think, a game, Marty, where I really questioned whether Brisbane were going to be up for it without Reece Walsh and without Payne Haas as well. Those are two pretty big losses. Less of a loss, but Pecura was also out too, which meant that Young Hunt from the Dragon system, who's gone up to Brisbane now, ended up starting in the back row. Brisbane really did a pretty good account for themselves, really, because I thought that Melbourne would have had it all over them. But, I mean, they did score right near the end, which gave us a bit of a grandstand finish. But the Storm came up trumps, but I've sort of come away the last couple of weeks thinking a little bit differently about Brisbane, because I really thought Payne Haas going down and Pecura going down, I did not like the strength of their forward pack at all. I thought it would put a lot of pressure on their halves. Reynolds actually went down this game as well, which hasn't helped them out that game, but they still managed to stick in it. And I ended up backing Melbourne live on the sports betting with Picklebet, which I loved because they did come over the top of them. But I thought they would have come over the top of them massively, whereas they only just scraped home. So well done to the Broncos because they really stayed in it without Walsh, with Reynolds missing half of the game, and without, you know, a few in that forward pack as well. But Melbourne obviously get the chocolate still.
Yeah, I thought it was an awesome game. I'm a bit like yourself. The Broncos, I thought, would fall back a bit this year, and I'm not sure they have the cattle to win the comp. But they showed in the grand final last year, and they showed again in this game against the Storm, that if an opposition falls asleep on them for 15 minutes, they can score 18 points in those 15 minutes. And there aren't too many teams that have that attacking threat. And as you pointed out, that was despite the fact that their best attacking weapon in Walsh wasn't there and their main meter eater in Haas wasn't there. So it was a bit weird. You look at the scoreline, 32-30, and I partway through that game thought to myself, right, in the Storm, we've now seen the team that can take on the Panthers in the grand final. And I'm not actually positive the Panthers will get there, but I just thought the structure and the shape that they threw at the Broncos was absolutely superb. And bear in mind, that was Munster's first game of the season. He looked really rusty. Hughes was awesome. I'm pretty sure that was his first game of the season.
First game back. He was out the week before, but yeah, they really missed him. They needed him back after his suspension.
Yeah, so I sort of looked at it and I just thought they've got such an amazing spine. Obviously, Pappenhausen is back. I mean, he's missed most of the last two years. And when you've got so much money tied up in your hooker, your half, your 5'8", and your fullback, you do struggle a little bit for depth. And in the last couple of seasons, I think that's where they've fallen short. But this year, their edges are just electric. You know, I'm a massive Blore fan, and I think with him and Katara on the edges, they're going to be really, really tough. And so it's funny, I sort of thought to myself, wow, I'm seeing the Storm of old here. Like, they really just look deadly all across the field. And then you think, well, if that's the case, how the hell did a battered Broncos, how did they get within 2 points of it? You know, and I think that's a real tribute to the gutsiness and grit of that Broncos team. You know, they're a really tough side. You know, they've got wow factor in some of their players, but if you look at the players that are coming through these lesser lights, and particularly some of the younger forwards, they're just doing such an amazing job. So I sort of walked out of that game thinking, all right, I've now seen two of the top four teams without a shadow of doubt. And I actually left it thinking, right, the Storm's the team now. That's my team to pick. But then you look at the Broncos and you think, well, if you're that positive about the Storm, and the Broncos got within 2 points of them, they were a little bit flattered, I have to say, by the scoreline, as you pointed out. But nonetheless, that's an amazing effort. So if you're going to be, you know, throw the Storm after that, you'd have to look at the Broncos and think those guys are serious contenders now.
Yeah, they're certainly up there and they deserve the credit. I mean, they're back three, very unheralded, but Arthurs, Mariner and also Saylor really stepped up, and they played above themselves, really. It's probably the best game I've seen Jesse Arthurs play. And that was really good. On the Storm side, you mentioned Katoa. Jeez, he's an outstanding footballer. He was such a good buyer for Melbourne. And he had two line breaks, two tries, an offload, four tackle breaks. Did a good amount of work. He's just so lethal for them. And he's just such a good fit. And it's amazing how well he's gone. But also, it's no coincidence that he's fired when Hughes has come back after that week off. Because Hughes was just killing it as well. Like, the way he's able to put on plays on that edge, on the right-hand side, but also pick and choose his moments and have that time. Like, it's something he didn't have a few years ago when he was trying to learn the halfback play. But you saw around the halfway mark where he was going right for the play and he saw that the Broncos were a bit tired and he just ran straight through because he's so fast and just made a quick line break very easily. You know, he was carving them up in that first half especially. So those two guys, I think, were amazing. But you talk about the Broncos young guys. Give a shout-out to young Takura, coming off the bench for his debut, scored a barnstorming try, but it was actually a critical one because it got them back into it at the end. And you know, you talk about big humans, he's like 6'9", the tallest NRL player we've ever seen. And you don't normally get those sort of guys. Like, normally when you're that big, you're just too big for the NRL because obviously you've got the beef on you as well. But he looks like a real goer and he was really pumped. He gave them something when he came on in limited minutes. And his size was pretty tough for them to handle, as you saw with the barge over try. So, I mean, you're right. they got some good young guys coming through. And the fact that they had so many young guys play Brisbane, but the quality of the game was so high. Like, you look at the stats and the Broncos completed at 86%, the Storm at 85%. You got 20 and 25 missed tackles, which is pretty, you know, reasonable. And they just played really well. And there were some outstanding tries too. Like, some of the tries that were scored by both teams were really good. So I was super impressed with both of those sides. A slightly less impressive game though, Marty, and one that I sort of want to talk about in some ways, and I'd like to leave the first half out of it, but I can't. The Canterbury Bulldogs beat the Roosters 30-26. It was absolutely belting down rain. It was always going to be tough conditions, but I was filthy about this game in so many different ways. Part of it, the first half, I was filthy about the Roosters because I thought that they came out very flat. And the first 20 minutes, the Canterbury Bulldogs had the energy, they had the intent, and they wanted to win that game. Matt Burton, who's been a bit quiet at times, was on. The whole team was on for the Bulldogs, whereas the Roosters are kind of sitting back. And I think in normal circumstances, the Roosters would have warmed into that game. They would have played better. They would have come over the top, and they probably could have still won by, you know, a dozen points at least. But because they had that quiet start and Canberra were up for it, it really bit them in the ass, and their attitude wasn't good enough in the first half. So as a Roosters fan, I was unhappy with that. But at the same time, the second half, I couldn't have been prouder because they came out of those sheds against all odds. And really, they probably should have won that game. They had all the momentum for about 45 minutes of that game. And so it was a tale of two halves for sure, but obviously a lot of controversial calls, which didn't help them. Dom Young getting sent off, which is hard to argue about too much. Radley, though, I would argue, till I die, that's an awful, awful call with 7.5 minutes and really cost them a chance at winning. And I think that's what everybody said. But the second half was great for the Roosters. The second half was terrible for the Bulldogs. So, I mean, if you're Serraldo, you sort of go away from that and go, it's great we got the win and the ball's rolling. And you sort of only want to talk about the first half because it's like, if you boys just play like that in the first half for 80-minute game, you'll be great. But that second half, they were really shell-shocked.
Yeah, there was a couple of games on the weekend where there really was a tale of two halves, and that was one of them. I thought the Dogs were fantastic in the first 20 minutes. It was awful conditions, and I expected the weather to be bad across the whole weekend when I was sort of looking at my bets on Picklebet on Wednesday. But then by the time I sort of got to the weekend, everything kind of dried out except for this game and the Dragons game. And I was shocked in the first 20 minutes for the Dogs. They were playing a dry weather football plan. Like, they were really spreading the ball well. They had heaps of shape, and it sort of looks like it's coming together for them, but then they got maybe six pretty serious injuries out of this game. So I think for the Roosters, they just weren't on. The Dogs sort of snuck out to an 18-0 lead, and when you're playing in weather like that, if you let the opposition get out to an 18-point head start, you're very unlikely to run them down. Then on top of that, the Roosters lost Walker in the 18th minute. They lost Tedesco in the 22nd minute. They lost Young in the 27th minute. They had to change the back line and then change it again and change it again. I mean, there was guys like Egan Butcher that ended up playing three different positions in that game. So the game was effectively over sort of before halftime. The fact that the Roosters were able to get as close as they did is a testament to their courage. And I thought they played really well. And I think some of the guys that came off the bench to fill these holes, I thought they were absolutely brilliant. Egan Butcher was one of the best players on the field in my mind.
That was his 100th game and he got a double. So, I mean, it was a pretty memorable performance.
Yeah, it was fantastic, you know, and again, it puts a huge amount of pressure on that coach at the Roosters, you know, between, you know, Crichton and Satili and Butcher and Wong, like there's just so many moving parts. There's so many guys that would be in the pack in any other team in the competition that are lucky to get any game time at all. So, yeah, as you say, if you were the Dogs coach, I think you'd be happy because they've been bad for a long time and you're definitely starting to see a team emerge. But I think you'd also be absolutely gutted by the number of injuries that came out of it. Like, if you look at the Dogs lineup for this weekend, there's absolutely no chance it's going to run out like that. At least three guys are going to pull out of that team. So I think that's a shame. For the Roosters, I think it's almost one of those games that you just throw in the basket and go, that was our worst half of 2024. We won't play like that again. They got some injuries and suspensions out of it, but they do have much better depth than they have last year. I quite like Porga, their winger. So they've got some good guys coming through. I'd like to make a shout out to Kikau, though. I think he's playing his best footy since he left the Panthers. And it's not coincidental that Burton is sort of sparking up at the same time. Bear in mind, those guys played on that left edge of the Panthers for a long time together. You know, Burton scored 3 tries, 2 line breaks, ran for 147 metres, Kikau ran for 160 metres and just destroyed everything in his path. And that's 2 or 3 games in a row now. Kikau's looked really good. So, I could see positives in that for both teams.
I think both those guys are outstanding as well. And it's great that Burton got his hat trick. It's the best game that he's played in Bulldogs colours for me. But I think that the thing that is underlying that's a super positive thing for Bulldogs fans is that he also got the try assist and 2 line break assists. And he was making the right plays. Like, obviously, they were targeting Dom Young's side and it was working, but he kept going there. And you could see him doing it, which is what you want to see because we all know that he's a strong runner of the football. But it's the other nuances of playing halfback and marshalling his team around, making the right plays and getting those assists that you want to see from him. And I thought that he showed a lot of that as well. So he was outstanding. Kikau was as well. Now, obviously, there was some controversy in this one, but we're going to discuss that a bit later because we've got another topic to talk about that. It was a game that was definitely throwaway for the Roosters. I agree with you because you lose not just your halfback and your fullback, which is basically bad enough, but when they're such quality halfbacks and fullbacks that your whole team depends on, it just absolutely kills you. So well done to the Roosters for persevering and trying to win that one because a lot of teams would have packed it in and they didn't. And well done to the Bulldogs because I think it is coming together and that's a springboard for them, especially that first half. That's a blueprint for what a successful Bulldogs team could probably be this season. Conditions for the Knights versus your Dragons. You talk about bad conditions. They were pretty bad too. At McDonald Jones Stadium in Newcastle, they were worse conditions. You could see just when the guys were jogging, there would be a huge puddle that came up off the ground when someone stepped down onto it. It was pretty amazing. And Ponga, like with his last try, he just slides over through a puddle that looked like a pool. So it wasn't great conditions. Certainly the Dragons were in it, I think, until about the 25th minute. And when Tuala scored that 25th minute try, the floodgates kind of opened and the Knights just kept looking more and more likely that they were going to put it away at home. I think, obviously, Zach Lomax has been playing really well. It's pretty crazy that he wants to leave when he's playing career best footy. His numbers, like, he wants to leave your Dragons, mate. He had a try, a line break. His try assist was outstanding with that flick pass. And 5 offloads and 6 tackle breaks. Didn't miss a tackle. He did have 6 errors, but, I mean, we'll excuse that with the conditions. He was fantastic for them. But at the end of the day, mate, 30-10, the Dragons just weren't really in it after the first third of the match, I didn't think.
Yeah, I was chatting to one of my mates before the game, and I said, in theory, it was a good matchup for the Dragons. The forwards sort of cancel each other out. Bear in mind, Frizzell was injured. In the back, sort of 3 of the 4 spine players are really not exceptional. And one is, we had Hunt, they had Ponga. And in the sort of out wider, there's not really a lot of pace in either three-quarter line. So I was chatting to my mate and I sort of said, look, if we play this at the Gong in normal conditions, I reckon the Dragons would have won that game by 4 points. You know, if we played in Newcastle, I thought the Knights would win by 4 points. But if we play on either ground in the wet, I said we would lose by 18. And that was my prediction going into the match. I said we'd lose by 18. And I was pretty close. We lost by 20. The key to those conditions is always who handles it the best, and in particular the control and the kicking game. And unfortunately, Ben Hunt's never really played with a lot of control. That's not his strength. And he's a terrible wet weather footballer. I've seen him play in the wet so many times, and he has been damn near the worst player on the field every time. It's just not his thing. You compare that to the Knights, they had both Cogger and Hastings, and those guys have both played in the United Kingdom. You know, they played in Super League for years. And so while neither of those guys are anywhere near as good as Hunt is, they're vastly superior wet weather footballers, and I thought strategically, tactically, they just trounced us. They kicked into the puddles, they skimmed it across the puddles, they bogged it in the puddles, they hemmed us in the corner all game, and we just kept putting up these Hail Mary bombs for Lomax. You know, it was just an amazingly bad game plan, and we just didn't adapt to the conditions. The other matchup was Ponga versus Sloan, and in theory, fullbacks, in theory, don't like the wet. I played fullback, I love the wet. A guy like Ponga, yeah, okay, it's going to be harder for him to do these beautiful cutout balls because you are playing with a slippery ball. But it's also true that your big forwards kind of get bogged, and if you've got really light footwork, you can carve them up in the middle. And I thought Ponga was just superb. You know, he's just such a wonderful athlete. And the flip side of that was Sloaney. And, Sloane's, we all know he has positional troubles. We all know he's learning to become more physical. His defence isn't first-grade standard yet. But he has worked really hard in the off-season, and I can see a lot of improvement in Sloane this year. The problem is, at this stage of his career, he's never going to go well on a heavy 10. You know, he really probably needs a good four to show his best. And all this talk about Lomax switching to fullback, I really hope that doesn't happen this week. Lomax has been named on the wing, but that doesn't mean there's not going to be changes. Bird's been named at centre, doesn't mean there's not going to be changes. I don't really know what Dragons team's going to run out. It won't be what's listed in the Daily Telegraph. So, and I think that's where we lost the game. The truth of it is they handled the conditions. Their completion rate was good. But if you look at the stats, there was actually very little between the stats. Like if you looked at it and said who won, you would have probably thought the Knights, but not by many points. And then you look at it and you sort of go, well, how the hell did we lose by so many points? And that's the problem with the Dragons this year. We just don't have those match winners. So if things go our way, if you get the right conditions, the Dragons can, I don't see them beating any top four teams, but I think the Dragons can make teams work to beat them. The problem is when things don't go our way, we're going to get absolutely smashed. And that's what happened. And I think this will happen all year. I think the Dragons will come out and win a tight one, for example. I'm very confident in their chances against the Tigers this week. But then the next week they'll come out and they'll lose by 20. And you'll think, well, how'd that happen? It's like, well, it's the same team, but they just don't have this amazing roster. So if things don't go the way, they struggle. Shout out to Dylan Lucas, man. What a weapon. He's not even in their best 17. And every single week this guy scores tries. He's the best anytime scorer at $5 you're ever going to get.
I love him.
I hit him every game, mate. You know, he comes out, gets a try, a line break, 12 runs for 116 metres, 3 tackle busts, 43 tackles. I mean, this is a bloke that isn't in their best 17. So, I'll tell you right now, if you're putting a bet on this weekend, mate, just first person to hit is Dylan Lucas.
He's always around that $5 mark. He's always good for it. I've said actually a number of times, and I was talking about it on Twitter actually. I would actually move Frizzell to 13 to accommodate Lucas, because Lucas is great. It's just unfortunate that they've also got Pierce Paul, because Pierce Paul also looks like a weapon as well on the edge. So I just try and accommodate both, and it's that old coaching philosophy that goes head to head, where one sort of coach will say, "Look, I'm stuck to my positions, and there's just this guy is better in that position, so I can't play the other." Yeah. And then there's the opposite of that, and I tend to be the opposite where, well, look, I need to fit the best talent in, because if I got the most talent on the field, that's what I want. And, you know, it's just no disrespect to Adam Elliott, but I don't think they lose much by moving him to the bench. And he can also play prop as well, or Frizzell could even play prop if they wanted to move that around when a substitute comes on and play Frizzell bigger minutes. And Frizzell's, we know, just as good in the middle as what he is on the edge. So I'd love to see that happen, because I agree with you. Like, Lucas is wasted on the bench, and he's even more wasted if he's actually out of the 17 and not even playing for them.
Yeah.
Big fan of Dylan Lucas.
The problem with moving Tyson, and bear in mind he's an ex-Dragon, so I've watched him play 1,000 games, is that he literally cannot pass the ball at all. So if you're going to move him into the middle, you'd probably, and I agree with you, I would absolutely be moving Tyson into the middle. You might start with him on the edge for 20, then bring Lucas on and move Tyson in closely. Tyson's played a lot of Origin middle and done exceptionally well.
Oh, yeah, but a lot.
He needs to really play more of that prop-style role. So I think what you would probably do, because Adam Elliott's such a wonderful ball player, I think if you're going to move Tyson in the middle, you'd either keep Elliott at 13 and play Tyson at prop, or you might potentially wait until, one of their utilities is on to slip into 13, because Tyson, for all of his wonderful skill, you're not going to be getting any ball movement left or right if he's at
13. Nah, you won't. You could probably leave him starting at 13 for the first 20. We all know the old softening up period of the first 10 or 12 minutes anyway. Yeah. And then Elliott just comes on at 13 and you shuffle him up front.
Yeah, that's right.
Either way, I think someone's got to accommodate Lucas there. And if it's not, geez, I reckon some teams are going to be circling for his signature to see if he's available.
Yep.
Let's move along. It's not a great game to talk about as South fans. 34-4, the Warriors beat South. And look, I have to give, I'm not going to give South any credit, but I am going to say I thought that the scoreline sort of flattered the Warriors a little bit, just because that first half, I was actually at the pub watching this one. I met up with my brother-in-law and we were all keen for the footy and stuff. And we both turned to each other about 5 minutes before the half and said, this first half is shocking. Like, the Warriors had so much ball for that final 20 minutes of the first half, where they were just, the Souths weren't up the other end at all. And it was constant penalties or turnovers where the Warriors just had so much ball. And at halftime, like, the Warriors had not taken advantage of it at all. They were quite fortunate that they scored on like the 37th minute, because until that happened, you know, what it was 12-4, and it really should have been a lot more than that. And really up until the 35th minute, it was 6-4. And the Warriors had so much ball up that end and just did nothing with it and were really bad as well. Obviously, very different second half, because the Warriors just came out of the sheds. I would say, even though he wouldn't admit it, Webster probably put a rocket up him, because the second half they just came out and it was just a blitzkrieg of tries and attack and line breaks, and Souths just had no answer, and some of their defence was awful. Sean Johnson with a couple of tries, assists, was great. C&K back really helped them,
yeah,
and you could tell that as well. But you know, it's, to me, I don't want to take credit off the Warriors. The second half of the Warriors was great, but I think that the final scoreline kind of told a different story than what the reality was, because I was not enjoying that first half the way it was going for the first 35 minutes.
Yeah, I actually thought the Rabbits looked good when they started. Like, the first sort of maybe 10 minutes maximum, even that's probably being generous, but Cook and Cody and Latrell were really busy. They were combining beautifully, and I expected the Warriors to win comfortably, but I sort of thought maybe the Rabbits are on tonight, and then it just fell apart. And if there's one thing we know about the Rabbits, is that when things don't go their way, they don't have any alternative. There's no plan B for their plan A. And they started dropping balls, giving away penalties. Their edge defence was woeful, and it was even worse up the middle. I mean, Egan is a fantastic hooker, I have to say. If it wasn't for his head knocks, you know, he'd be one of the best hookers in the game. And then that sort of ill discipline and spitefulness that you see with Latrell and Cody really came through. And I don't know, partway through that game, I was watching it. It was just like, what are you guys doing? Like, this just is not even a football team, right? The credit to the Warriors, they're almost the best in the league now at throwing multiple players at you in any given set. Like, as a Dragon supporter, I'm so used to the plan being hit it up for the first four tackles without support, then give it to Ben Hunt, hope he does something great. When that doesn't work, bomb. That's the plan, right? And I'm so jealous when I watch teams like the Broncos and the Storm put a play on play two and then back it up in play four. Like, we just don't do that. But if you look at the Warriors at the moment, they are often putting in three legitimate attacking plays in a set. And I can't remember many teams doing that in my life. Like, that coach has got them absolutely humming. And there's so much footy IQ in that team. You know, Fenua Blake, Tohu, Campbell, Egan, these are all very, very smart footballers. And then you throw in Johnson. And if you look at their plays, like, if you look at the try that Berry scored and then on the other side of the field, the try that Ford scored, they're all the same variation. Well, they're variations of their main play, which gets Fenua Blake over the line. And if you look at Tavaga, when he comes on, they play almost the same play again, but Tavaga runs a slightly different line. And so as a defender, when you're under the pump, and they play so quickly that you are often under the pump on close to your own try line against the Warriors, you look up, you see your defender, you know you're one man short, you have to space out a bit too wide, which you just cannot do. You have to make them pass the ball. But you think you sort of got it under control, and then all of a sudden the ball goes to a slightly different guy than you're expecting, and he's running a slightly different angle than you're expecting, and he's straight through. Like, the number of times that you see Warriors score close to the try line and they're not even touched. I mean, it's absolutely elite ball playing. And while SJ gets the credit for that, it's the coach and it's the lines that they're all running. It's just it's a really awesome team to watch the Warriors. Like, I've always been massive fans to watch the Storm in particular because it's so smart, you know, or to watch someone like the Panthers because they're just a machine, or the Broncos because they're just so elite in terms of their talent and their speed. But I think the Warriors have probably pushed themselves up into the top four in terms of watchable teams in the league now. They just have a really awesome game plan. They're fun to watch. They're disciplined. They're clever. They're smart. And they're not actually massively fast, but they don't need to be. So, yeah, I thought the Rabbits were just awful. And I really enjoyed watching the Warriors. That's probably close to my number one team I tune in for now.
Yeah, it's big trouble for South Sydney. And we're going to talk about that later. It's one of the segments we're going to discuss with some of the South Sydney news. But I think that Webster would have known coming out of those sheds that they had to put the foot on the pedal. And that's exactly what they did, because South Sydney in this game, but certainly all year, look like a team that as soon as they're down double digits, they're the old-fashioned drop-your-bundle team, where they drop their bundle and they've basically consigned to the loss. They've got absolutely zero resilience in that team. They've got zero fight in that team. And it is really hard to watch if you're a South Sydney fan, because you can see it in the body language. You can see it how they play. We saw the Roosters, the two games before, come back from, 26-0 down. And this side, you know, as soon as they're down, they look out. And I think that's going to be the blueprint for every team playing them at the moment until they show some heart and attitude. Every team is going to say, get on them from the start, because when you put points on South at the moment, they're done. It doesn't matter if it's 15 minutes into the game, they're done. So they're going to really struggle, because teams are really going to start putting the blowtorch on them very, very quickly, because they're going to know that they're going to drop their bundle. The next game?
Yeah.
The next one was a bit better than South Sydney performance, that's for sure. The Four Pines Park, big win for the Manly Seagulls, 32-18 over the Panthers. And it was a pretty good tussle. Panthers went in straight away. I tipped the Panthers for this one based on their great win against the Roosters the week before and how good Brad Schneider was. He actually scored the first try in this one. And then credit to Manly. You know, Turbo goes over for a try. Daly Cherry Evans has been really good with the kicking lately as well with the goals. And they kept putting it on him. And then you get that Penrith fight back. Dylan Edwards is having a phenomenal first 5 weeks of football. Comes in with a try 45 minutes in. Manly's back under the pump again with Penrith coming. And then Manly put on, you know, three tries in a row to basically seal it, even though Edwards got a double with his second near the 70th minute. So it was a really impressive win for Manly, one that I thought that they probably needed to have as well. And I thought that for Penrith, you know, it's still a good showing. They're obviously waiting for Cleary to come back, and they've obviously got other guys out as well. Like I mentioned last week, Sorensen, when he was out, that sort of changes that edge quite a bit, and I think it really downgrades with Garner there. No offence to Garner, but they've relied on Sorensen, and he's been really good for them. But, you know, it's a great win for Manly, one that they needed and thoroughly deserved, I thought, on the weekend. Despite the controversy with the Cooler try, I don't think it would have been a difference anyway.
Yeah, I know. Can you believe they would have? Anyway, we're going to talk about refereeing, and that'll be fun. Yeah, look, losing to Manly at Four Pines is no disgrace. And as soon as I like you, initially when I tipped, I was on the Panthers, but I had hesitations because it was at Manly. But then when I found out that it was the game where DCE was going to surpass Cliffy Lyons, it was like, nah, they'll lift for this. And they did. So I had a really good betting plunge in that game, and it all paid off. I had Eagles in a turbo, into Cooler. I had multi-central for me. So it pretty much panned out the way I thought it would be. The Panthers are struggling without Cleary, and that's fair enough. Henry getting concussed within the first couple of minutes that he came on, threw their bench rotations out. They were out enthused. It was, you know, the bottom line is the Eagles lifted for DCE, and fair enough too. The Panthers, I thought, actually played okay. That just wasn't really their night. So the talking points out of that game, you know, State of Origin's around the corner, and, you know, Tedesco's been a fixture there for a long time, and he's playing very good football this year, I have to say, Teddy. But you look at what Edwards is throwing out at the moment, and you sort of do have to ask yourself, is now the time? You know, he's just in superb form. He's a lot bigger. When you look at him, he's physically a lot bigger than he was last year, Edwards, and he's so fast. I couldn't believe when he made that break how quick he was. So I think he's really turning into an elite fullback now, which is ironic because he's got Drinkwater doing it at the Cowboys as well. So I think New South Wales has got some pretty interesting question marks to sort of come up to answer, and I think Edwards is one of them. He kind of almost needs to be there. The other point that came out of it for me is, you know, have the Tigers overpaid for a halfback who's actually only a 5'8"? You know, when Luai goes there, he got paid halfback money. He's paid the sort of money it takes to push a team around the field. And if you look at the other players in the Eagles, sorry, in the Tigers roster, none of them are halves. They're all 5'8s, you know. So I just sort of, I looked at that and thought, God, I think the Tigers are going to get stung by that decision to sign Luai. The other thing, I have the Panthers finally lost enough players that their depth is tested. You know, they've won three premierships in a row now. Every premiership, you lose a few players. It's just the way it is. But they've got so many amazing juniors coming through. They've always been able to lift, and they just look as good as they were the year before. I'm just wondering if maybe this is a year that they've just been bitten into a bit too much, and I feel like the Panthers are more susceptible this year than ever before. And the other thing for me is Ben Trbojevic, like he's really only a starter because of his surname. You know, he's nowhere near as good an edge back row as Corey Waddell is. He's a good bench player because he can cover centre and edge. And I think maybe in some ways the injury to Garrick when that pushed Burbo to centre, and he played quite well at centre, it allowed Waddell to get 77 minutes on the field. And again, because of the injuries, you're seeing that this week. And, yeah, the more I look at it, the more I think to myself, you know, that's the mistake that the Eagles is making. They can't persist with Ben Trbojevic as a starter. He needs to go back to the bench. So, yeah, it was a good game. I think both teams would be reasonably pleased with that.
Yeah, just on the Luai, I did notice and actually said to the people I was watching with, you know, this year it looks like Luai when he first came into grade. And I remember when he first came into grade, like the first year that he was starting the halves, I said, I can't stand how this guy plays and he's not going to make it. He is going to end up in reserve grade because, and credit to him, he improved his game immensely. So, you know, I was wrong about that. And I always put the caveat that when guys are young, they can change their game immensely and they can learn and develop. So it's just about that point in time. If their game doesn't change, they're going to be in trouble. Luai's game changed. But unfortunately, I've seen the trappings of his first year in this season. And that's not good for Penrith because the things that he was doing was he played very selfishly. And it wasn't, I don't think it's intentional. I'm not calling him selfish, but it's in Supercoach realms, you know, it gets talked about a lot how the left-hand side just doesn't get any ball. It's made May useless as a Supercoach option at the moment. And it's what he was doing when he first started. He didn't play like a half. He played like a half in the old Toyota Cup under-20s competition where you was the star, so he just ran the ball all the time and scored tries. Every time he just kept stepping in, running himself, going away from the outside and never actually putting on any plays or calling any plays either. And he was just running. And unfortunately, at first grade level, that's not good enough. And it renders the other guys around you fairly useless. He puts the other guys in bad positions. He ends up with a play the ball in the wrong position as well, which is a big deal. And it was just him running around with his head cut off, basically, like a chook with his head cut off, basically, stepping everywhere but going nowhere.
Yeah, so if you look at Luai, he has never learned to beat a player on the outside. And he's never learned when to pass short and when to pass long. So from the moment he gets the ball, he's hemming his entire left side into the sideline. And if you rush up on him, which teams do, you know that he's going to step back inside. And, yeah, from time to time he'll catch you out. He's got beautiful footwork, but it's always off that left foot. And if you look at when the left edge of the Panthers has been good, and a couple of seasons ago in particular, it was outstanding, it's always been Cleary wrapping around from the right to the left. And Cleary's actually been the one that's created numbers. So, yeah, I've been looking at Luai really closely this year just because when they paid him that much money, I just couldn't believe it. I'm like, wow, you guys are paying a massive amount of money for a dude that can't control a game, but also a guy that has some very demonstrable problems within his playing skill set. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty disappointing. And I don't see how he's going to match well with a player like Galvin. You know, Galvin's awesome, but he's not a halfback.
It's going to be really interesting. But I also think that Penrith need him this year because one thing that's sort of gone under the radar a little bit, Cleary's durability has to be questioned now. He's got a few years in a row with reasonably serious injuries where he's out like 3 or 4 weeks at a time, and he's probably going to be out the Tigers game now. It's just come through. He's racing the clock because his hammy's not responding, and that keeps happening. And like you said, with the Penrith depth, I'm not sure that they've got the attack in them at the moment with the changing of the roster, and that's going to be a big issue for them. So interesting watch this next fortnight for Penrith and certainly going forward. The Tigers ended up losing to the Dolphins 26-16. Look, it was a game where I think that we can safely say that the Hammer's been in great form. He got another try. But I got to be honest, I wasn't really up for this one too much, and I didn't watch it as closely as some of the other ones, but had a heap of line breaks in it, which got my attention. But they were mostly from the Dolphins, who, you know, ended up carving up a little bit. Bostock's been a lot better than what I thought he was going to be. I kind of thought he was a bit of a fringe first grader, but he's been able to create and finish for them, which is nice. And the Hammer, like I mentioned, I think has been doing pretty good things from full. But probably the only thing that I'd say for the Tigers that I was sort of made me sit up for is that Utakamanu has been playing much bigger minutes lately. And he's actually been probably getting closer to what we thought he should have been 3 years ago, which is a good thing for the Tigers. And look, for Benji Marshall's Tigers, losing to the Dolphins up in Queensland, you know, we know the Dolphins are going to compete. So, look, I thought it was a game where, you know, both sides were okay. And certainly, you know, the Tigers shouldn't be too worried. And I think that they'll keep marching on and competing at the moment.
Yeah, it was another game of two halves, really. The Dolphins, in many ways, are your typical Bennett team. You know, they're tough. They've got aggressive forwards, a clever spine, tons of speed out wide. They're always going to be hard to beat at home. And that's another thing to point out. How good were the crowds on the weekend? Man, and every week since that Vegas launch, and I don't know whether Vegas was the thing that really drew attention to it, but the NRL's just firing at the moment, and the crowds are insane. I think Bennett's just done an amazing job. Like, in your wildest imagination, you couldn't have imagined that in the second year the Dolphins would be leading the competition. It's a huge blow losing Herbie, though. They're going to struggle to replace that. As for the Tigers, yeah, they really missed Alvin not being there. They just didn't really get a lot from their halves. Olam played well, but he just was nowhere near as dynamic as he'd been previously because Galvin wasn't there.
Hardly got the ball.
Yeah, that's it. Caesar was amazing. It just had the ball on a string. Again, another one of these UK footballers that, you know, the moment you get a field that's damp and the ball starts to get wet, he just comes into his own, you know. So he was awesome. The sort of things that I got out of that game, firstly, credit to Benji. I don't think he's going to be a great coach. He's doing a lot better than I expected. And they're playing a nice style of footy, the Tigers. The roster is good in areas. It's a bit weak in others. But I have to say, I mean, he's gone well. So well done to the Tigers. Utai Kamana, he's origin bound. There's no doubt about it. I look at the front row for New South Wales and I see that as our weakness. There's just too many guys like Campbell, Gillard and Paulo that to me are just a level below now what you need. He's big. He's aggressive. He can ball play. He runs really good lines and he can step. He's got a massive motor. I think Samuel Afeanu in maybe a year or two will probably pretty close to origin as well. So they've got some really good forwards in there. You know, and I have to say, I'm happy for the Dolphins. I think they finally worked out their halves combination. You know, O'Sullivan's a good player. Milford's obviously not been a player that he was, but he's still floating around. But I think with Katoa and Nikarima, they finally found the best balance in their spine. And you combine that with a very, very clever hooker and just a dynamically gifted fullback. And that's a really interesting spine. So I can see why the Dolphins are leading the comp. I'm surprised, but I full credit to them. They're doing well.
Katoa's definitely gone under the radar. His yeah. half play is, you can yeah. see that he's matured a lot from last year and he's learnt a lot, which is great. And the next game, though, talk about teams that haven't learnt much or improved much. The Titans lost 35-22 to the Cowboys, but I can't even give the Titans the credit of the scoreline. You know, there was, what, 6 unanswered tries before the Titans scored. And, oh, sorry, 5 unanswered tries before the Titans scored their second try in the 57th minute. And unfortunately, at that point, one of the things that completely turned the game was Chad Townsend got sent to the bin for 10 minutes. And earlier in the game, in the first 15 minutes, Zach Laybutt did his ACL. So, I mean, being down a centre already and then losing your halfback for 10 minutes at that point of the game completely stopped the momentum for the Cowboys and it just screwed them around for 10 minutes. So that's when the Titans actually came back in and started scoring. And then lo and behold, you know, 2 minutes after Townsend's back on the field, it's back to your regular programming and Kyle Felt scores in the 69th minute and it's really put to bed. So I thought that the Cowboys' attack was good, but I have to say in that, Scott Drinkwater has been playing outstanding lately. He had 3 line breaks, 2 tries, and they were just, it was easy. He was just slicing through these holes. A try assist, a line break assist, because he's got those beautiful balls that he throws, especially to Talangi sometimes. And Reece Robson, he is having a pearl every year. I actually thought last year he was a bit down, so I was a little surprised almost that he got picked for Origin, because I thought he was better the year before. His form now is much better than last year. He had a try and 2 line breaks, a line break assist, 4 offloads. But his general running game was outstanding and what he was known for in the juniors coming through your Dragons, and he's doing it now more. But it's not even just this week. It's like a hooker can have a really good week against poor opposition, which the Titans are at the moment. But he's been doing it all season. Like last week, he ended up with a line break. The week before, I think he had a try. He's been attacking really well. And as much as I think there's other players in this Cowboys side that are playing well. Reece Robson and Drinkwater, to me, are really pulling them and really pushing their attack at the moment.
Yeah, well, to place in perspective how good Robson's running game was, Drinkwater, who just slashed them all game, he ran for 188 metres. Robson, the hooker, ran for 160 metres. Now, when was the last time you saw a hooker run for 160 metres? And as you point out, this is not the first game he's running over 100 metres. It's incredible. It'll be really interesting when they sit down to choose the Origin team, because on form, he'd probably be the first forward you'd pick. But I'm pretty confident Coruscant will be the starting hooker. And they have to have learnt the lessons of the last few years of having an imbalanced bench. And to run a second hooker is madness. I think they need to run someone like McInnes, although, to be honest with you, I'd actually prefer Connor Watson. They need someone on the bench who can play hooker and give Coruscant a spell, but someone who can also play another position well, whether it's lock or, you know, Watson can play a lock 5-8 center. You know, they just need to have the number 17 who's got more versatility than just playing hooker, which is a shame for Robson because he's just in the form of his career. I was gutted when he left the Dragons, and I'm even more gutted now. So, yeah, I think, look, the Cowboys, they're a beautiful team to watch. Drinkwater's just amazing. Like, he really is a wonderful player. But they've conceded an average of 27 points per game. And if you take out the first match, where I think they might have only conceded 12, they're conceding over 30 points a game. So, unfortunately for the Cowboys, as wonderful as they are with ball in hand, it's only a matter of time until they come up against some of the better teams, and they're going to find that it's harder for them to score points, and they're going to get absolutely shredded by them. So, I think the Cowboys will bank enough points to make the eight, but I don't see the Cowboys as being a premiership threat at all this year.
No, and look, they had 15 errors in this, which is very high, and they also only completed at 71%. It's good that they throw the ball around, but it's got to be put in perspective. Like, they had those errors and still managed to put 35 points on. That was against the Gold Coast Titans, who I think are very, very clearly the worst team in the competition right now.
Mm. Yeah.
And so that's got to be put in perspective. And the Cowboys haven't had a hard draw. So the litmus test for them, as impressive as they are, like in this game, when you're watching them attack really well, the litmus test will be against some of those better sides coming up soon. So before we move along, we need to take a quick break to introduce you to a brand new partner of the NRL All-Stars podcast, Bonus Bank. You can go to www.bonusbank.com.au today to check them out. Sign up for free or go straight to a paid plan to access all the different benefits that Bonus Bank has. But basically, Bonus Bank is Australia's number one match betting website. So it's not gambling. It provides a profitable side hustle for anyone who likes their betting by taking advantage of promotions and bonus bets that you can make, giving you a risk-free, tax-free income every week. So Bonus Bank has software and calculators that do all the work for you. It's semi-automated, and it compares over 90 bookies across Australia as well to give you information on all in one place. It's also got its own app that you can do it on. It's also got several other features like betting and bonus calculators, tutorials and free education on how to make money from the bookies, Australia's biggest match betting Discord community you get to join as well, odds match software, full customer support, and a whole heap more. There's so many benefits, it's crazy. So if you want to compare offers and promos all in one place across bookies and learn how to make some extra income through the bookies in Australia, then Bonus Bank is well worth a try. Go and sign up today with a range of their plans. You can go completely free just to trial them, or you can go straight to a paid membership, and the different membership tiers will give you a whole heap of different features that are well worth it, because, look, you get the money back anyway with the profits that you'll probably make. So sign up by referencing All Stars as your code on the site, and you'll get a special sign-up offer as well for a membership today. Bonusbank.com.au. Go get in there. Australia's number one side hustle for anyone who likes their betting. Let's move along to the last game. The Raiders 41 over the Eels 8.
Struth.
I did not see this coming.
No.
And I will put my hand up to Raiders fans. I picked you for bottom four. I'm still not going to go back on you making the eight. Look, I don't think they'll make the eight anyway, but they are playing very, very well to start the season. And one of the things that I think that we saw in this game, but we don't see enough credit given to Ricky Stewart, is Ricky Stewart always plays to his strengths. He knows that he doesn't have a really dynamic spine. He knows that he doesn't have as much attacking prowess potentially as other teams. He knows he's got a good forward pack, and he's always had a really good forward pack. He uses the forward pack really well, and he's managed to integrate these young guys. Like, Strange had an absolute field day in this one, but even Schiller coming in on the wing ended up finishing really well. Young Timoko ended up going great guns, and he's development the last 2 years as a center has been outstanding. Mm. So, I mean, Xavier Savage is another one. He was meant to be the next fullback. He's playing great on the wing for them. So, I mean, Stewart has managed to integrate these exciting young guys and play to strengths, which puts them in a position to succeed, whilst also, you know, relying heavily on this really good forward pack. And the Eels forwards have actually struggled with other forward packs for a couple of years, despite some of their big names that they've got in their pack. They just got steamrolled, and it just ended up being so much room on the outside for the Canberra Raiders fast outside backs to take advantage. Rapana ended up injured in this one. He came back, but he's out for a while now. Horse got injured and he's out for a while now. Didn't make any difference. And the Eels just looked absolutely shot. There's no surprise this week that they put Arcee in, who I think will be a much better pairing with Brown. Despite the numbers on the back, I expect Arcee to probably play more of a seven role. And it's a bit of a shame that Talangi got dropped. He shows some promise, but I was always surprised that they didn't just put him at centre for Morgan Harper and put Arcee in the halves to help Dylan Brown out. So I think those changes could be good, but far out, the Eels have a lot of soul searching after getting that sort of scoreline put on them against the Raiders.
Yeah, so it's interesting that you mentioned Ricky Stewart, because that was the first point I was going to make as well. Ricky, I find him a boring, frustrating coach, and have actually said on multiple occasions that I think the time has come for the Raiders to move on from him. He's been there too long now. But he has really modified his game plans this year, and it all comes down to speed. The Raiders just really haven't had a lot of fast players. Like, if you look at guys like Hopewate, they're just not quick. And Rapana, despite his brilliant sidestepping, is not quick. Now, all of a sudden, you're bringing in plays, the centres are both pretty quick, but their wingers now are really fast. And this week, they've just named Chevy Stewart at fullback as well. So you're actually looking at a back three now that are just insanely fast. And you could see a really discernible change in the game plan from Stewart. He still kept it tough at the beginning, but they were more than happy to go early. And I love early ball when you've got fast outside backs. And he really executed a different game plan. And I think that took the Eels by surprise. I know me watching it, I was like, wow, I've never seen the Raiders play like this since, you know, Mal Meninga and Laurie Daly left, kind of thing. You know, they were great to watch. As for the Eels, I think the less said about them, the better. Now, they got big problems there. They've got a poor hooker, you know. Lussick, I don't know what Lussick's doing. There's more to hooking than just running around and making 24 tackles. You know, he just is absolutely no threat with the ball. They've got big issues in the halves, you know, without Moses, obviously. And, you know, Gatho, while he tries his guts out, but he needs help, you know. He can't do it all on his own. But there's big issues within the pack. The front rows are all down on form. They've got minimal depth in the outside backs. I mean, Morgan Harper's been named again this week. I mean, you've got to be off your tits. How can Morgan Harper be remotely in the conversation? So, I think Brad Arthur's his coaching is questionable. I'm not convinced he'll survive there for much longer. But to me, the biggest thing, talking point out of this game, and it was the final game of the round, is it just shows you why coaches are prepared to play so much money to these older blokes. You know, guys like Cherry Evans, Reynolds, Hunt, SJ, you know, they're all in their mid-30s, and some of them are talking about playing on till they're damn near 40, and that just never used to happen. You know, but the truth is, half is just such a difficult position to play. It takes years to develop, and the control that you require, it's just so hard to get in young players, but it's the most important position on the field. And I think it's noteworthy that if you lose your half, you're in big trouble. So if you look at the teams that are currently down their main half or lost one mid-game, so Eels, Panthers, Roosters, Tigers, Broncos, they're the five teams that have lost their number one half. All of them lost on the weekend. You know, so if you ever want to sort of understand just why you see guys like Sammy Walker at the Roosters, for example, why you see him come in a grade, then suddenly go back to reserve grade, or if you look at what happened with Ilias with Hawkins coming in, you know, rugby league is littered with all of these young halfbacks coming through. They just disappear. You know, it's just such a difficult position to play. So, yeah, these teams that have got an elite controlling half, and I do not include Ben Hunt in that conversation, they have an absolutely massive advantage over the rest of the competition.
They do. And it's also one of the reasons why I half rate off the Raiders at the start of the year. But it's also why I give credit to Stewart in the way he does play to his strengths, like I said. Because, I mean, they're starting Denny Levi, Fogarty, Strange, and Rapana at fullback as their spine. And they're going to be, you know, debuting or second game, whatever, of Stewart at fullback now. Like, that's not a strong spine at all, and it should lose to a lot of teams, but it doesn't. So they're doing a good job.
But I tell you what, Fogarty's playing well.
He is. He's playing well, and Strange is playing better, well, the last couple of weeks than probably what we thought that he could. So, yeah. I mean, that's good. That's good development. And again, these are young guys, so you don't know. Maybe these guys will step up and be great. But we do need to move on. Mm. There is a couple of real big topics to talk about. And the next topic is another week, another round of clangers from the officials. Now, I'm just going to go through a list of the main ones. And I have to point out to everyone that I could actually list another dozen that were real bad calls, but I'll just stick to the main ones. And they're not real bad calls. Like, you know, one of them, you know, the Dom send-off I mentioned earlier. I was happy with the send-off, but I've said to a lot of people, I'm fine with the send-off, but I also think that probably too many people jumped on what Robinson said, because he was always expecting Dom to go off the field, as was I as a Roosters fan. But whilst I was happy enough with the send-off, I do kind of see some truth in what he said, that there isn't much consistency, because you will see other things very similar to that hit where it's not sent off and it's only a bin or even a penalty sometimes that are almost similar. And Dom is also, to put it in perspective, a foot taller than what Taff is. He bent his body and he did come in for a regular tackle. So it wasn't like there was malice or any real recklessness to it. So I'm happy with his stint on the sideline that he got, and I was happy for him to leave the field. But I do understand where Robinson was coming from. But that wasn't the bad call. The bad one in that game, Bradley getting sin bin for absolutely nothing. It was a nothing sin bin. And the issue that I have with that, that is even worse, is like, Annesley's come out and said it's the wrong call. But it's not even the wrong call where you say, oh, yeah, that shouldn't have been a penalty. They've gone from, is this a penalty, to we're going to go a step further and send him from the field. And that is just, you cannot have that type of leap where it's actually a no call. Like, it's one thing to give a penalty, but to actually send someone from the field and ruin the game, that was horrendous. In that same game, you had Sam Hughes put on report for a tackle, which at first I thought he hit him high. On the replay, which the bunker gets to look at multiple times, he didn't hit him high. His first point of contact was the chest, and then he's flung him around in a move that was initially thought as a head slam, but it wasn't a head slam. He's just hit him hard, and he's a big guy. You shouldn't get penalised because you've hit somebody hard, and that's exactly what happened. So the Bulldogs were dudded there. The Townsend sin bin, much like the Radley sin bin, was because of a hip drop. It wasn't even a hip drop. You know, tackling someone around the legs, can't this be a sin bin if you come down on their legs? Because it's how your legs tackle. The cooler knock-on try, I don't care what some of the commentators say or whatever, that is called a knock-on every single day of the week. Todd Smith is the worst referee in the league, and they will not admit it because Annesley defends it, and then the next week quietly drops him and says it's not because of form. Just be honest with everyone. Latrell stays on the field. Any other player that throws an elbow to someone's head in just such a polarizing manner where you just, everybody sort of said, what was the need for that? You didn't even need to throw it. There wasn't even circumstances where you had to put your arm up and it was an accident. You've done it on purpose. Like, you've got to be off the field for that. And then you have him suspended for that for 3 weeks, which begs the question, why wasn't he in the bin for 10 minutes? But then on the other account, everyone is taught from when you're 5 years old, if you put your hands between someone's legs, you're in trouble. You never do it. He had time. Yeah. Yep. And thought process to go and grab someone in between the nuts, I'll just say it as it is, and go and, you know, start to affect a spear tackle. And the match review committee says, oh, but he didn't go through with it. He still put a hand up and under somebody's groin to upend them. You can't do it. And this is only a week, Marty, after we had the JWH obstruction drama, which was an awful call, and also Taylan May, you know, getting in trouble for a head clash, which... he did nothing. Oh, yeah. He did nothing for, and he didn't get suspended. Oh, and then Graham Ennisley and the NRL blow up about it and throw their toys out of the court and says, well, the match review committee didn't do their job. It should have been suspended. Like, it is an absolute debacle at the moment with the calls. And unfortunately, it is happening multiple games, sometimes multiple times in a game, every single week this season.
Yeah, so I sort of break it down into two different areas. I break it down to the on-field referee and the bunker. So the on-field referee, and just to declare my own bias, I have spent years refereeing touch football and rugby union. I'm a referee, right? I have been abused so many times, right? And the thing is, you're often unsighted on the field. You know, everything's happening at speed. There's players in motion. You're trying to look at multiple different areas. You need to make a snap decision, and the truth is you get things wrong, right? I actually don't mind... I'm not impressed with the quality of the refereeing. I'm particularly disappointed in some of the diversity hiring I'm seeing come through in the NRL. There are some really terrible referees at the moment. Todd Smith's one, Casey Badger's the other. You know, these guys just aren't first grade level, right? So drop them. The problem is, who are you going to bring through? And we just don't seem to be attracting referees. And I can understand why. I mean, you'd think it would be a nice lifestyle, but you just attract haters, right? So, you know, we have to do something about that. And then the coaches and the commentators do pile on. So that's sort of the problem with referees, is it's just hard to find good referees. And unfortunately, it's not improving, but that's not my issue.
But let me jump in there as well, though, just on that point. The reason why it's not improving, though, and the reason why I don't put it all on the referees is because if you continue to put positive reinforcement on bad performances, yeah, you're not going to get better. And if you continue to give feedback that's wrong, which I believe it is with some of the interpretations, some of the calls being made, then they're going to keep making wrong calls.
Yeah,
so
that's
in
right.
a way, it's not even their fault. It's got to come from the top.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And so that's my point of moving into Annesley and also to a degree, Peter Volandis. Like, there's stuff going on in headquarters which is wrong. And it's affecting the game. It's, well, not just affecting, it's infecting the game. So a lot of this with the referees, I don't blame them. I think they're in a situation they shouldn't be put in, but it's also a degree of, well, quite frankly, bullshit being fed into them, you know. They're not mushrooms. But the issue I have more is the bunker, you know, because they're the ones that have got multiple views of incidents. There's usually two people sitting in the bunker. In fact, I think there's always two people. They've got time. They don't have players in their face. They're in a calm, controlled environment, and they should know the rules. But I'm seeing two different mistakes occur. The first of those is just situations where they're just getting it wrong. Like, a ball's knocked on and they miss it. I just don't understand how that happens, right? There's a situation on the weekend where one of the players, a grubber had gone through, and the fullback, I can't remember what game it was, but the fullback had his foot on the line when the ball touches him. That means it's out, right? But I could hear the person in the bunker, and they're saying, oh, we're just rolling the view through to, because there looks like there's a hand from the other player. So it doesn't matter. If it comes off the other player's hand, it goes forward, it's a knock on.
I think that was the if heels touches, game.
Yeah, if it touches this player and his foot's on the in-goal line, it's dead. So either way, they're going to get a tap restart. And somehow they came back with a decision it was a dropout. And you're like, you're focusing on his hand. All you need to worry about is his foot. He's out, right? So those things I just can't agree with at all. But the other thing that they're getting wrong in the bunker, and this is something that can change, is the interpretation. So unfortunately, the referee has to make a decision a lot of the time. And he or she makes a decision based on what they think has occurred. But unfortunately, they are not in a very good position to tell. The problem is, having made that decision, it can't be overturned unless the bunker is 100% sure that the decision is incorrect. The problem is, this isn't a court of law, right? It's a game of footy. You know, stop taking things so seriously. You know, they've got no ability to use common sense. They're not allowed to use their initiative. They're not allowed to use their gut feel. They don't have all the perfect camera angles. And so a lot of the time they're looking at something and they're going, well, we kind of know that the ref was wrong, but unfortunately I can't actually 100% conclusively prove that he's wrong. Therefore, I have to support the on-field decision. That on-field decision is made by a referee who's 30 metres up the field. You know, so why don't we just change that, so that if a referee has to make a decision and they're not confident in that decision, they might award a try, for example, but then they say bunker call. In other words, yes, I'm awarding the try, but I acknowledge the fact that I'm not in a good position to make a decision. So I will now let you take ownership of that decision. And if they just did that one thing, things like the call a try, for example, it would have been called back straight away. So I think when you're looking at some of the problems coming in from the bunker, part of it is just, what the hell are you going on about? The other part is, well, actually, it's not your fault. You're actually just following the rules as they apply. Let's just change the rule, you know?
Yeah, they need to do an absolute overhaul. And I agree with you. I'm most frustrated with the bunker, because if you get to, and I hate when Annesley says, oh, they've only got a small amount of time. When viewers at home can watch a replay once and know the answer, or twice at best, then how does a professional that's trained in this, that watches it six or seven times, not come to the right answer? It just can't happen. And I see a lot of defense about, look, you know, it's a hard job. You can't bash referees. They're going to make mistakes. They're human. And that is all true. And I agree. But there's always got to be a line in the sand. And if it's egregious enough performance, it's just not acceptable performance level. And the Bradley Sinbin that I used, it didn't go to a penalty. It went to a send off the field for 10 minutes. That is way too egregious an error to get away with, and it changes games. And in the same game, and this is the problem, in the same Roosters game a couple of weeks ago, you had the JWH obstruction call, and then you had a Penrith try where it was a black and white Satili Tupanua and Kiri hit a runner who's a block runner, and there's contact made. And that is always called a no try, and they didn't even look at it. Mm. And it wasn't even mentioned afterwards by Annesley. And it's like, well, consistency game to game is one problem. But if you've got inconsistency in the same game with the same rule, then what are we doing?
Yeah,
because you're all looking at the same vision, and it is just such a huge issue. And unfortunately, it's none of it's working well. The interpretations and criteria, I've said it before and I'll say it again, it's a really sneaky way to change rules. And they do it all the time, and the interpretations and criteria changes and stuff, you may as well be changing rules. So you can't turn around and say you've changed two rules this year. You've changed about a dozen just because of the interpretations and stuff. And bugger me if I'm a professional ref, if I'm going to be able to keep up with that. Mm. And the speed of the game and everything, what we expect from players at this, the way we're managing the game at the moment, it's over managing rugby league, because these guys are tired. They're playing at speed. They're the best at what they do. They're competing in a sport. And you're expecting them to do things that they can't possibly do to the degree that we're expecting. So the expectations are way out of whack for the game that we're actually trying to officiate. I'm going to leave it there because I'm going to lose my voice. Marty, what is going on at Souths? Cook has dropped. JD is about to be sacked.
Yeah.
They look awful. Let's talk about the cookie dropping first of all. I actually made the point, which most agreed with, but some Souths fans disagreed with, that in context, I actually think he's been one of their better players. Now, don't get me wrong, I don't think he's been good. No one's been good at Souths. But when you go through it, he's probably the best player in the spine. He's played better than Latrell, better than Cody, better than the halfback that's been dropped.
Mm.
And he's played better than most of their forwards. Like, you look at the back line, they've made heaps of mistakes as well. I don't think Cook's been good, but dropping him is not going to change anything or improve them. And he's played better than at least half the team. So, I mean, is that really the answer? I was a bit perplexed at that.
No, so Mamazoulis, this young guy coming through, is an absolute weapon. I've seen him play many times, and he is unreal. So they won't necessarily lose that much, I have to say. But at the start of the season, all the talk was that Cookie's getting on a bit, and they need to sort of go down the path they did with Coruscant, which is you're no longer really an 80-minute hooker. We see it was a 60-minute hooker, and we're going to bring in Mamazoulis to just take some of the game plan and tackles and keep you sharp. And I expected that to happen. Then they roll out the team for round one, and Cook's playing hooker. You know, and obviously they do have you know, one of their players jumps in and helps him from time to time, but you know, they don't have that sharpness. And so I was just a bit surprised at the team lists. But mind you, I've been surprised by the Rabbits team list every week. I mean, I have no idea what that coach is doing with his roster. It's a bad roster, right? But it's better than that. So when I'd heard Mamazoulis was going to play, I thought, okay, well, that's actually good. I was all on board for that. But I thought the rotation would be Cook and Mamazoulis. So in a million years, I didn't think Cook was going to get dropped. He's actually played well, like in a badly beaten side, and in a side that I have to say almost gives you the impression that they're giving up when things don't go their way. I think Cook's been good, and if you look at the statistics, I mean, there's more to footy than stats, but if you look at the statistics, Cook is playing well. So yeah, I was shocked by that.
Well, especially when you've got like Cody Walker's. You're talking about guys getting on. Cody Walker's 35, and he's been super ineffective. And not only that, he's been quite negative. And I think his influence is negative on the team at times. So, I mean, if you want to make a statement, drop Cody Walker, because you've got Jack White at centre that you can easily move to six because he's a career six. You know, that makes sense as well. And if you want Mamazoulis to get time, that makes complete sense, but you should have been doing it from the start. But also, put him on the bench, play him 30 minutes off the bench. Or if you want to start him, put Cook on the bench. Like, Cook has been a leader as well and a representative player too. It was a puzzling change if you were going to have to make a change to shake things up. I didn't get it. I understand why Demetrio is going to be sacked. He's won like 5 out of the last 18 games for Souths, and it makes sense. But unfortunately for Souths, I think they've had their head in the sand too long, and it just looks like a team that has been running to the ground because it's been allowed to fester for so long. And people that are Souths fans, some of them might disagree with a lot of statements about Souths and whatever and think it's a pile on. But look, it's the whole saying where there's smoke, there's fire. And Sam Burgess came out a year ago and talked about this stuff very openly and left the joint, you know, and Russell Crowe was unhappy with that. And there's been a lot of talk and a lot of rumours about this. So there has to be something there. And then when you watch them play, the negativity in their play, the body language, the mistakes, the professionalism, and like you mentioned, the petulance that you see from Latrell Mitchell at times, as well as Cody Walker. It's just none of it paints a good story, a good picture. So there has to be stuff going on there. And they just, unfortunately for teams, it takes a long time to get out of this. And one of the things that I'll say as well is, like, I think ideally what you would do almost is, because you've let it go for so long, a lot of the time in other sports, you'd get a coach come in to blow it up and you'd actually send Latrell out. You'd send Cody out and you'd rebuild and you'd start again, because you've got to do that sometimes with these big characters and culture. In rugby league, you can't do it. If this was America, in all the major American sports, you would trade Latrell Mitchell and you would trade him for maybe, I don't know, maybe you go the Tigers and you get Young Buller in to play fullback, and you'd also get Papa Lee thrown in, and you'd probably also get a first-round draft pick, and you might even get Young Galvin thrown in, and you'd build around those guys and be able to compete very quickly again. In the NRL, it doesn't work that way. You know, you can't get rid of your superstar. You're stuck with them, because if you get rid of them, you can't replace them. And it's a big flaw in sort of how you have to manage NRL teams, because unless it's a real good free agency coming up, you're not going to be able to get another superstar. And even then, you might luck out and not be able to get them. So all you're left with is this money that you spend on players that are nowhere near as good, that aren't going to win you games. So getting rid of Latrell and maybe even Cody, that might help reset the culture or reset the team, but you're not going to replace that talent. So in the NRL, what you always have to do is find a coach and players around them that have the seniority and the balls to call out the behaviour and get the best out of them. And look, you get the best out of Latrell Mitchell, he could be the best player in the league, but no one's doing it at the moment.
Yeah, so the elephant in the room here isn't actually Demetra or any of those players. It's Wayne Bennett. So if you look at the Rabbits, they've got problems. You know, they've got some aging stars in AJ, Cook, Cody, and they're just not playing good football. They've got some brilliant younger players coming through, Murray, Kalau Matangi, Mitchell, and they've got two very good players in Arrow and Graham, but they're both injured. So once you get beyond those elite players, and they are elite, the roster drops down massively. So to succeed, you need to get the best out of those guys, because you've got so much money parked in them. You know, that's expensive property. From the moment you buy it, it needs to give you a return, and it's just not. And then the problem is they just haven't adapted under the new coach. So, I mean, I had a bit of a deep dive on Bennett, because he's an ex-Dragons coach, obviously, and I will love that guy for the rest of my life. You know, I was a long-suffering fan for someone to deliver us a premiership, and quite frankly, he did it with a pretty average team. You know, I love the bloke, but then we absolutely fell apart when he left. So to give you a bit of an idea as to what the Rabbits board should have been planning for from the moment Bennett left and Demetriou came, how's this for some interesting facts? So 3 years at the helm, grand final appearance in 2021, preliminary finals in 19 and 20. So the Bunnies were a powerhouse, right? But Bennett's track record suggested they would go backwards. The question is, how are you going to prevent that? And the new coach, by the way, it's not just the coach's issue, it's a board issue, right? So you look back at Bennett in his 21-year stint, the Broncos, 6 premierships. He leaves, Ivan Henjak takes the reins. He leads the club to its first missed final series in 18 years. Brisbane fall apart, Henjak gets booted. Bennett goes to the Dragons, he takes over a pretty poor roster, he immediately claims 2 minor premierships and wins them a grand final, right? It was a massive Bradbury moment for the Dragons. With Henjak gone, Anthony Griffin takes over at Brisbane, and after starting okay, they revert to type. Griffin's gone after 3 seasons. At the same time, Bennett goes to the Knights and somehow manages to drag a pretty average roster into the preliminary finals. As the Knights improved, the Dragons collapsed. So you've got history repeating itself, right? This is now 4 clubs this has happened at. And after Bennett's departure, the Knights slumped to 3 successive wooden spoons. I mean, that's an amazing stat, right? Brisbane eventually dumped Hook and called Bennett back. Only an amazing finals piece of bad luck prevented them from winning the 8th premiership. You know, you get the belief that once again, success follows wherever Bennett goes, and it does. Right? 3 more trips to the finals follows for Bennett before South lure him into the Warren. At the same time, Seibold goes and takes over the Broncos. They immediately, well, I think in the second season, they win the wooden spoon. So the reality is that every club has struggled post-Bennett. You know, so the Rabbits board needed to expect that, and they needed to bulletproof their club, and they didn't. So if you look at it, what does it actually tell you? Well, it's hard to say. First thing it says is that Bennett is just a brilliant coach. Like you just can't, unless you're moving from Bennett to Bellamy, you have to understand that the new coach is in big trouble. It's almost a poison chalice, right? Bennett's strength is not just himself and his own brilliance. It's the brilliance of the management team that he brings with him. When he turned up the Dragons, he rocked up with like six or seven guys, right? The problem is as soon as he left, he took them with him. So you don't just have to replicate the head coach. You have to replicate all of their support staff, and that's very hard to do. Point three, and this is particularly relevant for my experience with Bennett at the Dragons, is he's so powerful a figure. He pushes all internal politics aside. He takes full control and nobody messes with him. But the moment he leaves, the politics resumes and eventually the new coaches drown in that politics. And I would suggest that Latrell Mitchell and Cody Walker, absolutely the problem at the Rabbits. The next one is, and I guess it ties into what I just said, is that Bennett's such an amazing man manager. He gets the best out of all of his players, and he's particularly good with difficult players. He's particularly good with emotional players. He has a demonstrable success with Indigenous players, with Islander players. They just love the bloke. He's just so incredible. So when he's at a team like the Rabbits, everything's sweet. But the moment he leaves, all of a sudden these players that have been difficult to deal with start to act up. And it takes an immense amount of skill to be able to handle that. And the Rabbits are a very, very emotional team, you know. So I don't think that's necessarily a knock on Demetriou so much as just how good is Bennett, you know. And the other thing about Bennett, again, it's affected them all, is he is very, very focused on the premiership window. When he turns up to a club, he wants to win a premiership. That's his goal. He's not massively interested in bringing through younger players. And when he left the Dragons, for example, that was the weakness that we experienced. Yes, we got the premiership. And to be honest with you, that's actually all I cared about out of it. It was an amazing feeling, you know. But so few of our players in the lower grades had had any game time at all. Then all of a sudden we needed them the year after. They just weren't up to it. So I think to a degree you can look at the situation with South and you can sort of say, well, but you knew. What did you think was going to happen? This was always going to happen. You know, I actually think Demetriou is a good coach. He was in the Dragons reserve grade coach for a while and I thought he was wonderful. In fact, I think they won the premiership with him that year. But he's taken over a team that's so hard and it bristles with ego. I think there's some really questionable work ethics in the team. The footy IQ that should be there just isn't. And then he gets a few injuries, his team starts to struggle and everyone piles on. So I think with him, it's a very difficult scenario to judge, but I would suggest that it did not matter which coach took over from Bennett, they would be in exactly the same situation.
Yeah, it was definitely hard and it's some good facts there about the Bennett teams and the aftermath after he's gone.
Amazing, huh?
It is, and it's one of those things too where I partially agree with JD. Like, I'm not sure how good a coach he is, but certainly he's not all to blame. Like, you can blame him for some of it, and certainly some of his handling, if you believe some reports, hasn't been good enough. But you need a coach that commands respect. You need a coach that's not just good, like you said, or great, but that they've also got the experience. And unfortunately, you just can't find that many of those coaches, so it is very difficult. When I look at this side, every team's culture and attitude is going to come from their leaders. And you look at South Sydney and you say, who are the leaders of this team? And whilst Cam Murray and Damien Cook are senior, Latrell Mitchell and Cody Walker, I think, are the vocal and clear leaders of the team.
Yeah.
And they're the ones whose voices are the loudest in that team. And if they're your leaders, I think that you're in trouble.
Yep.
Because both of them are fantastic talents, and don't get me wrong, look, I think Latrell Mitchell, whenever he wants to, can be the best player in the world, not just the NRL, in the world.
Yep.
But leadership isn't something he has. Now, it's not always something that a great player has. You know, there's plenty of great players that weren't great leaders, and that's why they don't ever have a captaincy of a team, but it doesn't mean they're not a good player. But the problem is that if you're put in that leadership position, which Latrell and Cody are through how outspoken they are and the influence on that South Sydney team and the lack of other vocal experienced leaders, then you're in trouble because they're leaders by default and they're not able to set the standards. In fact, they ruin the standards and that has to be reined in and they have to address that. And it's something that's really, really difficult to address. I also just don't see the development in those guys. They've gone downhill. Like, I thought that Cody Walker at some point could have ended up being this really high IQ kicking passing seven almost, because his running game and his age was going to get caught up with him.
That's right. It
seemed to sort of make sense because he's got such a good footy IQ. It hasn't been coached into him or he hasn't decided to go with it. And then when you have a look at it as well, one of the other things that I kept I always shake my head at this. I saw Matty Johns do it on the weekend, and I couldn't believe that Matty Johns did it. You know, he was like, look, on their roster, this is a top four team potentially.
No, it's not.
And then on Fox Sports, they say it as well. You go through the team. It is an average team at best.
Yeah.
Like, the sides that they have, Jack Whiten's not a centre. He's okay at centre, but he's not great. Alex Johnson's okay, but he's old. You know, and the rest of them is just guys in and out of that back line. And then you've got Latrell Mitchell, who is a superstar, but then you look at the halves. You don't have a halfback. Cody Walker, at any point, anybody with any sort of footy IQ is going to know his form could go through the floor at any point, and it's not even his fault, and that has to be managed and coached, because Father Time has always won, and it will win again with Cody Walker, and it is winning right now. You look at that forward pack and you go, how is this a good forward pack? Murray is an outstanding player. Everyone else is either average to, I'm sorry, dog shit. Like, that's not good. Kola Matangi has shown promise, and then from about halfway through last year, for whatever reason, whether it's behind-the-scenes stuff, his form has gone through the floor.
Mm.
You know, and then you look at the bench, like, you've got guys like Moali, Havili, he's been a journeyman, Cheekam, he's been a bit of a journeyman, and Shaq Mitchell, Kepi, like, this isn't a good roster.
No, it is
barely a top eight roster if it is firing on all cylinders, and if you have Campbell Graham back. So I do think that there is a bit of unfair pressure, Marty, when you've got all these people saying it's a great roster. Should the roster be doing better than what it is? Of course it should. It is an underperforming roster. Is the roster anything near a top four roster? No. Is it a good roster? No. Mm. Is it a good roster going forward? No, it actually isn't. And that is a big part of the problem.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, it's easy to pile on the coaches, but so often I look at these clubs and I think to myself, well, I've run a lot of businesses in my life. I'm accountable. I'm responsible. When things go wrong, it's my fault. But it seems like in rugby league, and I think this is driven by the old school sausage sizzle mentality of a lot of the boards, they aren't actually accountable for anything. All they want to do is sort of change the pieces, and the easiest piece to change is your coach, right? Because your coach isn't part of your salary cap. So if you have to pay him out, well, you can afford that, but it doesn't affect your cap. Whereas so often I look at it and just go, actually, the things that you need to change are the board members, because these are the guys that didn't have a SWOT in place. These are the guys that hadn't done their due diligence. These are the guys that didn't understand that these things are often quite predictable. And so with Demetri, yeah, I mean, I find certain issues of his coaching to be very questionable. Dropping cookies is madness, right? But I look at it and I sort of think to myself, well, at the risk of sounding like a smart ass, this was always going to happen. You know, what did you do to fix the roster? What did you do? Where's your money even going? Like, you've obviously got so much money tied up. I'd love to know what Cody Walker's on. You know, he plays like 150 grand reserve right now. So, yeah, I feel sorry for Demetri. He's going to get done, but he'll bounce back. You know, he'll find another club. He'll be an assistant coach somewhere, in a bloody good one. And I do think he has the skills required to be a very good head coach in the years to come. He might go to the UK or something. So I do feel sorry for him, but it's not the end of his career.
No, I feel sorry for him, how they've handled it in the last week in particular. But look, yeah, in saying that, like, I've got no problem with sacking him, but because it's a results-driven business. It's just that you have to do everything else, right? There's never just one answer. It's never a silver bullet in rugby league, whether you're talking about on the field or whether you're talking about off the field. It's never a silver bullet that'll solve everything. It's always half a dozen different things when you're looking at this sort of carnage in a team that you're seeing. And if they're going to sack Demetrio, that's one thing. They've got to do everything else around it as well. So hopefully they do for their fans. And it's a proud club that's been around since the inception of rugby league in Australia. So, I mean, hopefully they do fix it. We do need to take the quick breaks. And this time it's to talk about oneworldcourier.com.au. You can go to oneworldcourier.com today. If you own a business or you just work for a business that has a lot of shipping needs or even a small amount of shipping or courier needs, then One World Courier are your people to talk to. They are an Australian-owned company. They provide fantastic service. And what they are is an actual platform that compares the market for all your shipping costs and everything. So if you want to have a look at shipping overseas or domestically, no matter how big or small for your business, they've got you covered. You can check out what the best rates are or what the best service is and pick that one, and they'll organise it for you. And they'll also watch it from point A to point B as well to make sure that you get the best service and whatever you're shipping gets there unscathed and quickly. So oneworldcourier.com.au, if you jump on and sign up today, you've got a spot there that you can say how you heard about One World Courier and just pop all stars in the cell there where you can write. And that way they'll see that you come from the podcast and they'll actually give you a great rate to start off with as well, so you can save straight away with them. So oneworldcourier.com.au. Go jump on there today for all your shipping or courier needs. I'm going to move on to something positive. Our last three segments, our positive pitch, our spray of the week, and our legend rewind. Positive pitch, bit of a different one. Like some people will say, Nick Meaney extending at the Storm. Why is that so positive, Barnsley? Well, look, there's just sometimes that there's players that I just think set such a good example for young players, but also just for young people as well, and are a different type of story than others. So, I mean, Nick Meaney's extended at the Storm. He's been playing outstanding football for them. He's a guy who has filled in multiple positions and solved problems for them. And he's known his role and he's improved his game so much. So I'm just really happy for him that he's actually extended at the Storm. And I think the Storm have done a really good job with him. But when you're having a look at him, you know, he came through, he played high representative football when he was young. I think he went great in the Intra-Super Premiership in the top team in 2017, the team of the year he was named. He was 19th man for New South Wales residents. He's done a lot of great stuff in his junior years. But when he's hit the NRL, like what happens with so many young players, he just didn't really look very good. You know, he came in at Newcastle. A lot of Newcastle fans hated him. He wasn't very good. That's what it came down to. And then he went to Canterbury and he wasn't particularly good at the start of things at Canterbury either. He got dropped a couple of times and everything. And a lot of young players will sort of kick stones and things, will end up with the same game and they'll just be journeymen or they'll go over to England or whatever. He all of a sudden just kept improving. And I just always admired how he went about his work and how he worked hard. And at the Storm, he's played centre, he's played wing, he's played fullback. He doesn't care where he has to play or what problem he has to solve. He gives the same effort everywhere. And you can see the last couple of years at Melbourne, people will give credit to Craig Bellamy, and it's probably partially due. But just the work that he's put on in his game after he struggled so much for half a dozen years in the NRL before it, it's a real credit to him. And it's a real snapshot of what you need to do as a young player coming through. If it doesn't go your way at the start, if you're not a superstar, if you don't have all the talent in the world, you can carve out a very good career and be a very good NRL player. And I love that they've extended him. I just love what Nick Meaney's done with his career.
Yeah, so I think everyone's happy for Nick Meaney. I was actually a bit surprised to hear the news because he is a proven fullback and he's playing centre. Historically, that's a much lesser paid position. And if you know anything about Bellamy, you know that he does not overpay for centres. In fact, he doesn't overpay for anyone outside the spine. And bear in mind, the Storm also have Faye Logo, who is, you know, the next big thing, depending on who you speak to. So I was a bit surprised, I've had a hunch for a while that Pappenhausen's going to let go at the end of 2025. That's when his current contract expires. And I look at the Storm, and in the last couple of years, the thing that's really hurt them is between hooker, half, 5'8", and fullback, they have way over $4 million tied up in that spine. And if you look at even the best teams in the league, they'll often have three outstanding players in the spine. Sometimes they might only have two. If you're unlucky, you might only have one. Nobody has four because it just cuts too deeply into your depth. And with Pappenhausen out with the injuries and from speaking to my physio, for example, who knows a lot about this style of injury, he said to me, he goes, Pappenhausen's never going to be the player that he was. He said, look, he's an awesome player. He's just one of those guys. He's so clever. He's got so much going for him. He's always going to be a very, very good footballer. But is he going to be that elite bloke knocking on the door of Origin selection and Australian selection? And he said, no, he's not. He's going to drop down to the level below that. The problem is he's being paid at that elite level. And so the thing I found interesting about Meaney is that, and I say this with no inside information, this is purely an opinion, it reinforces a belief that I've had for a while, which is when Bellamy goes, he's been so amazing at getting amazing results out of the lesser players in his team. He's been able to chunk tons of money into the spine and get away with it to a degree. The last couple of years, you could see the depth just wasn't there and there were some issues. And I think when Bellamy moves on, you have to be a little bit more realistic about it and go, can we afford to have that much money tied up in the spine? And the answer, in my opinion, is no. And I reckon the re-signing of Nick Meaney, as wonderful as it is, I reckon I would be focusing now on Pappenhausen. I think he's going to leave. I think he'll be on the market in 2025.
Yeah, possibly. I tend to agree with that as well. But well done, Nick Meaney, for extending. And I really like the player that he's become as well. Spray of the week time.
Yep.
Before the legend rewind. So we're going to get negative again here. Spray of the week for the NRL pretending that Jennings isn't playing his 300th game. Bit of a controversial one because we've got to pretend that he's not an NRL player, apparently. But look, this is controversial. I don't want to offend anyone. It's obviously got some fairly sensitive topics involved and things, but I mean, the NRL's thrown out there that due to past circumstances, Jennings will not be recognised for his 300th game. Now, I just think it's a load of rubbish. It's absolute garbage. It is stupid. It is unprofessional. It is hypocritical. And it really does just really magnify exactly what's wrong with the NRL over the last sort of four or five years. Now, to me, there's a lot of facts going around that aren't facts. So I think it's important for people to know the facts. First of all, the NRL has been very ambiguous in what they've said. He's been gone for drugs charges, which he's done his suspension for. So plenty of other players are playing that have had that. Hudson Young early in his career, Bronson Cherry's just come back. There's other players as well. This has never happened to anyone with any drugs charges. You've done your time. It's time to come back. And the other thing as well is that a lot of people and fans especially have thrown around, look, he's sexually assaulted his ex-wife. He's been charged. He's been found guilty of doing that, blah, blah, blah. It's not the case. Now, the facts of the case are this. He got taken to civil court for damages by his ex-wife after they broke up and divorced. And there was a mountain of list of things about him abusing her verbally, physically, and also a heap of other stuff as well, like gambling their money away, being a bad husband, and him owing her money and all this other stuff. Now, in a civil case, it's a judge's job just to come to a conclusion of, does he think there might be some truth here at all? And it's to everything, you know, and it doesn't go through a jury. It doesn't have any sort of burden of proof that's required for a criminal charge at all. It is just an opinion about money. And he got done for having to pay her money for in compensation for their marriage, basically. That is what it comes down to. That is the facts of the case. It got referred because of the potential criminal allegations. It got referred to the police, and the police chose not to charge him at all. And it has not gone to any criminal proceedings. He has not even been charged. Now, there has been 100 NRL players in the league in the last couple of years who have had a police charge. Obviously, not all of them guilty. I don't want to, if he has done any of these things, then 100% throw the book at him. But if we've learned anything in the last few years, I would have thought that we would have learned that unless somebody is proven guilty and we have proof of that and they are actually guilty, you can't just assume that they are and treat them like that. And that's just how society works, and I think is fair. Now, throw all that out the window. Say you disagree with me. Say you think that there's all these other things that I'm wrong about. Or throw it all out the window. At the end of the day, the NRL decided to register his contract and employ Michael Jennings as an NRL player. The minute you do that, you cannot decide to not recognise him the same way or treat him the same way as every other employee contracted to you. And they've not only done that, but they've done it on the fly because his contract got registered a long time ago. They set no expectations that you'd be treated differently. And where are we going with this? Like, if he gets selected for Origin, are you going to say no? If he starts scoring tries, are you going to, like, wipe him off the record books and pretend that he didn't score him? Like, he's an NRL player. So everything that comes along with that, he gets. That's just common sense. So to me, even if you think that Michael Jennings is a bad person or shouldn't be, you know, helped or recognised or anything, then the NRL shouldn't have registered him. But the fact of the matter is the NRL decided to register him, so there couldn't have been any proven sexual allegations against him at the moment because they wouldn't have registered his contract and certainly anything serious. And the other thing that's the upshot too is that if they thought that there was enough proof or evidence of it, they wouldn't have registered his contract to begin with. So the NRL have been absolute hypocrites with this. I think that's been completely unprofessional. I applaud the Roosters for actually recognising his 300th game because at the end of the day, regardless of what you think about Michael Jennings or not, or what you believe or what you don't, what assumptions you want to make about it, he is playing his 300th game and he's an NRL player. And that's the end of the story really for me.
Yeah, so when you sort of emailed me this point, this was the one where I thought to myself, I need to be very, very careful here. My background is law, so I know a lot about burden of proof in civil versus criminal cases, and I actually did look into that case, right? So I'm going to say nothing more about the case at all. I'm just going to get in trouble, right? What I will say is this is my biggest knock on Peter Volandis, right? In many ways, he's a hero of mine. He's a financial wizard. But he's falling into that same kind of trap that's destroying Hollywood at the moment. You know, he wants to preach to us about how we should live our lives instead of just acknowledging that football is entertainment. I watch it to watch the sport, right? I don't actually want anybody sitting on a throne made of lies telling me how I should believe. You know, it seems like at the moment, every second round is we're celebrating something. It's a race or it's a gender or it's a culture or it's a sexual preference or whatever it is. It's like, I don't care about that stuff, guys. I just want to watch football. Right. So with the Jennings stuff, I mean, performance enhancing drugs. So what is, you know, he's done the crime, but he served his time. I mean, he must have lost probably $1.2 million in earnings because of that. And as for the domestic violence charges, like, okay, yeah, I don't really want to say too much about that other than to say it's a civil case. He's never been found guilty. And if you felt that strongly about it, why did you let him back in the first place? You know, what is the difference between him and JDB, for example, which was a criminal case.
Actual charge, yeah. And there's like several players that have been charged. Yeah. Like Dylan Walker got charged and pled to a lesser degree, and that was domestic. You know, Greg Inglis famously got done for assault on his ex-wife and got downgraded, but he pled guilty to it. You know, like there's that many different players in the league that have had actual charges.
Yeah, and but that's only the tip of the iceberg. I mean, yeah, it's one of the reasons why I'm very uncomfortable seeing rugby league players put up as role models for children, because they're not. You know, there are some exceptional men in rugby league. Someone like, I mean, Isaiah, you know, Cameron Murray, Cookie, these sorts of guys, right? They really are absolutely the Dvojevic family. Like, they're just wonderful men. But I've got to tell you, there's a lot of absolute awful people that play rugby league. It's a sport where you bash the crap out of each other. It's a brutal working class sport, right? And that's just what it is. So let's not try to truss it up and think we can gift wrap and put ribbons around it and all of a sudden everybody thinks it's different. It's a tough, brutal sport played by brutal men. So a lot of the stuff that's gone on in their backgrounds is not nice. But the bottom line is, it's something that we don't need to draw it into attention all the time. And that's what Volandis is doing. You know, he's decided that he has the right to play judge, jury and executioner. And as you point out, if you decide that you're going to allow him back in, you can't suddenly turn around and say, but anything you achieve in the sport moving forward, we refuse to acknowledge. If that's the case, don't let him in. Well, why did you not let him in? Because he would have taken you to court and sued you. And Volandis knew this. So it's just like, oh, we sort of have to let him in, but let's just pretend he no longer exists. I mean, life doesn't work that way, right? So, yeah, I found that thing with Jennings to be purely vomitous in nature. And it's not so much the Jennings situation itself as the fact that I am seeing this being pushed out across the rugby league and I'm sick of it. Stop telling me how I should live my life. Stop telling me how I should think, because the chances are I'm more educated and have better life experience than you. Right. So let me be me. And I just want to watch football. That's it.
At the end of the day, you know, I think one of the most hypocritical things with all of this is the fact that the NRL picks and chooses. And it just doesn't sit well with me. You might not like the people that are playing at times, but you can't just turn around and pick and choose like this. And we've celebrated like,
yeah, that's right.
I mean, you want to talk about things that are a stain on the game and stuff. I mean, the Melbourne Storm went through the worst cheating saga in Australian sport. And I'm not, you know, hounding on the Storm or blaming the players or anything, but 2 years ago, you know, against the side that they beat in a, you know, grand final that was stripped off them, they celebrated it on a night and took out commemorative jerseys and stuff. You know, you want to talk about embarrassing the sport. Like,
yeah,
there's stuff like that happens and it's fine, apparently, but, and that's proven and illegal activity. But the biggest thing for me is, if the NRL could just read the room on the game of rugby league, they'd be in a much better place. And this is just another spot where they can't read the room, because there's a slightly vocal, very minority that might be unhappy with some of this stuff. But the majority of rugby league fans wouldn't have even given it a second thought. And if you look at some of the comments and things on social media, most people are supporting it's a 300th game. That's it. It is. But the other thing too is that if the NRL just didn't mention this, there wouldn't have been much media coverage of it. They had mentioned it, so they built a rod for their own back, because now it's going to be negativity for the next month of football about Michael Jennings being in the NRL. It hardly would have been brought up before, but now every gossip mag or gossip e-mag that you could find or social media page or whatever is going to be spread out with this, because it's a controversial thing that everyone can jump on. So they just build a rod for their own back time and time again, and instead of just shutting up and understanding that they're rusted on fans, maybe don't care about this stuff, they pander to the small minority. Now, look, if the majority felt this way, then, you know, maybe it'd be a different story. I just don't see it that way. It is a game for the people. And at the end of the day, I'll just leave it with, even if you disagree with some of the things that me and Marty said or some of our takes on it, the spray is very simple. you decide that he's okay to play in your game, then he's playing in your game, and you have to allow him the same opportunity and accolades that everybody else gets as a contracted NRL player. And that is really the end of it.
Correct. That's it. That's the story. I mean, these sorts of situations are very, very hard to deal with because they involve things that occur in society, presumably, and I think it may not, I don't know. But, you know, we are trying really hard as a society to stamp this kind of stuff out, and that's an admirable thing. But you need to know where to draw the line, and this is just not where you draw the line.
That's exactly right, mate. Legend Rewind. Heath Barnes, rest in peace, passed away at 89 years of age. And look, it's sad, but he had a great life. He had a full life. And it's a really nice Legend Rewind to do, because I do feel that, especially in the modern game and also just in 2024 in this day and age, people do forget about the history of rugby league and some of the great players that have come before it. So it is a really good time to recognise someone like Keith Barnes in his life. He's someone who played fullback for the Tigers, had grand final appearances in 56, 64 and 1966. He's actually Kangaroo Tour captain for 1959 to 60, but surprisingly to a lot of people, he actually was captain of the Australian team for 14 tests and was for a really, really dominant Australia period as well. 266 first-class games. People would have seen 15 tries and said, oh, he wasn't a prolific try scorer and he mustn't have been that good. He was such a good fullback. He amassed 2,125 points because he was nicknamed Golden Boots because his goal-kicking was absolutely stuff of legends. And I love to go back and watch some of the old games and stuff, but you also need to listen to what people say about him. He was a phenomenal leader, which is why he was a captain. People loved him. And with his goal kicking, like, he had so many different goal kicking performances where he's like 10 of 11 or perfect in big games. And one of the biggest ones was actually against St. George, mate, your Dragons in 1960 in a big game, 15 all, 3 minutes to play, 57 metres out. He put a kick over Norman to win the game straight between the posts. Mm-hmm. And he was very small. You know, he's listed at 74 kilos. He was said to be a bit bigger at times, but I reckon he would have been lucky to be 70. Like, he was small. He was Welsh born, came over when he was 15 and just adopted rugby league. Mm. And he's rated by so many players around that era as one of the great fullbacks, even though he wasn't a prolific try scorer. Certainly one of the all-time great goal kickers, but his defensive ability, his ability to read and marshal around his team and to lead his team, it was just right up there and just super outstanding. So if you haven't seen any Keith Barnes, because he's an older player from the 50s and 60s, go and have a look at some footage, because he was just outstanding. And if you're a young goal kicker, look at guys like Callaghan, El Masri and so forth, but go and have a look at Keith Barnes too, because, geez, he hit some big goals and he was a great player.
Yeah, so firstly, is he related to you?
I wish he was. I would love to claim it. But I have no Welsh descent, so it is not me.
Nothing. Yeah, well, I mean, he was named Golden Boots for a reason. Those. He was the only player I've ever seen who was consistently kicking goals over the halfway. And by over the halfway, I mean like 55, 58 metres and on the sideline kind of kicks, you know. And you've got to remember, back then the balls were very, very different than they are now. They were shaped differently. They got waterlogged. They got muddy.
Could you imagine with the weather on the weekend how hard those kicks would have been?
Well, I don't think there'd be a player in the game that would be able to kick anywhere near the way this guy kicked. You know, he's the sort of bloke, he was so talented. If he was to play the modern game with the modern balls and the kicking tees and all that, he'd probably be kicking at like 92%, right? He was that good. He was tiny, but he was a pure athlete. Wollongong boy that should have ended up at the Dragons, but didn't. And I think the other thing that's kind of sad, probably worth mentioning at this point as a Tigers man, is that one of the grandstands at Leichhardt Oval is named in his honour. And unless they can somehow swing a late-minute deal, it looks like Rugby League is about to lose access to Leichhardt Oval. So this was a week where we kind of not only lost the man himself, but we lost the grandstand named after him. And Leichhardt is pretty close to my favourite suburban ground, so I think that's really sad. So, you know, to lose him and his grandstand, it's just like, come on, guys, let his memory live on through us being at Leichhardt watching footy in his grandstand, you know. So, yeah, it's sad.
It is very sad. And it's a really good point. You know, you lose the history of the ground, and some of that history is just even the grandstands that have been named after some of these legends like Keith Barnes. In his younger days, like, has to be said, like, you talk about a supreme athlete. He could have, you talk to anyone, friends, family, or people that played with him, he could have played rugby, he could have played soccer, he could have played cricket. there's like plenty of childhood friends that you see interviews with that said, you know, he used to play backyard cricket and you couldn't get him out. He was just such a good athlete across so many sports. And it was great that he chose rugby league. He actually had a big post career too, where he was with the, well, he started commentating, but he was also in the Tigers head office as well. And you talk to people like Benji Marshall and some of these Tigers greats, they loved him. And everybody, like Ciro and Roach, he was around coaching around that time as well. Everybody at the Tigers loved him. He's just such a legend of the game. And everybody also says the same thing with him on and off the field. He's described as the perfect gentleman of rugby league. And when you look at the skill, the talent and everything else, and then you look at that as an attribute as well, and his leadership, you know, he was just such an ornament for the game. He'll be missed now that he has passed away. But you can certainly always relive the memories by having a look at him on YouTube and everything else. An outstanding player, Keith Barnes, outstanding fullback, an outstanding man. Marty, that is the podcast for this week. Thank you very much for jumping on and talking footy with me. As always, it's always a beefy episode with a lot going on in rugby league, but I appreciate your input and your point of view as always.
Yeah, no, good to be here. I'm about to hang up from you and I'm about to do a fishing podcast, how to catch flathead on soft plastic. So it's a day stuck in the office just talking stuff.
Well, like Keith Barnes, mate, you're a man of very many talents, including fishing, so well done.
And surfing.
And surfing. So everyone listening, you can download the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, SoundCloud. We're everywhere. Make sure you subscribe so you get the episodes straight away. Also, jump on our partners. Now, with all our partners, how it works, you have to know, All-Stars is your promo code or affiliate code to put in when you sign up with any of them, because they will give you better deals if you come from the podcast. So make sure that you do that. OneWorldCourier.com.au. All your business freight or shipping needs, they will give you some great rates. Also, bonusbank.com.au, they do some great match betting promos. They have information from over 100 bookies. They are a great side hustle for you to make some guaranteed income. Have a look at all the tools and everything there by signing up today. And picklebet.com.au, the betting partner of the All-Stars podcast, with some great odds and great betting for you. Really enjoy talking the footy. We will be back with some super coach next week as well. Until then, enjoy rugby league for the round. Enjoy your super coach as well. Can't wait to talk all of it again real soon. Hey now, you're an all-star. Get your game on, go play. Hey now, you're a rock star. Get the show on, get paid. And all that matters is gold. Only shoot.